Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today, co-host Daniel McAdams. Daniel, good to see you.
Happy Monday, Dr. Paul. How are you?
I'm doing well, doing well. But before we start the regular program, Daniel has a little announcement to make to our viewers.
Yeah, well, we've been experimenting a little bit with Super Chat, and I just wanted to announce to everyone that we have enabled Super Chat, and I know a lot of you great people are there every day and talking to us, and some of you might want to chip in a little bit to keep the show going. So we've enabled Super Chat, and we certainly appreciate any contribution you could make. But what we're going to do is on Mondays from now on, we're going to list the previous week's Super Chatters so you get the recognition that you deserve for helping us keep the show alive. So we'll hope you consider getting involved in that. We'll have a couple of other things coming up in the next couple of weeks, memberships and things that might sort of bring us closer together as an audience and as us trying to put the show on. So thanks again for watching us. Dr. Paul?
Very good. We want to talk today a little bit about militarism and the military-industrial complex and how much money they spend and how much they want more. The fact that there's been reports now that some of these companies, even though they get a lot of money, but they're related to the industry, the military industry, and they claim that's great because they create jobs, so that's a jobs program. It's great for national defense, but sometimes I wear that comes from. It looks like we aggravate things. But anyway, the program that's just been imposed and started is the fact that some of these companies, and probably they're not lying, but it shouldn't be getting a bailout. They're getting bailed out because they say, well, you know, coronavirus, it messed us up. Some people had to be laid off or suspended, and we have to pay them, and it was confusion in order to get to their plants or whatever. But they were justifying it, and it looks like they're going to get some bailout money, and it's patriotic, so nobody can oppose this. And I think there's going to be a vote, but who knows? They don't vote on very many things these days because there's always a lot of ways to get around it. So this is something that once again, you know, once it starts, it never ends, and it's also, you know, a part of this militarization of the police that we've talked about, and it's expensive, and there's a lot of downside to it, and figuring that out, and trying to understand how
Black Lives Matter. The Black Lives Matter.
Black Lives Matter. How they work it into, because you know libertarians don't like to militarize the police anyway. But right now we want to talk a little bit about bailing them out, and they're in trouble.
Yeah.
And I saw on top of the list, of course, Lockheed. But I always thought Lockheed will never go bankrupt, and it looks like they'll always get in. All these companies are going to be taken care of, and it seems like money makes no sense. They don't have to worry about money at all, and this is it. So once again, it's a continuation of a policy. It's not a Republican policy. It's not a Democrat policy. It's a national policy that both parties endorse. It's part of the idea that the military is sacred, and Republicans and Democrats are fully responsible. It just depends on who's in office, who they try to put the blame on. But it is a definitely source of inflation because it runs up the debt, and they spend endlessly. They never cut anything, and this is what we're dealing with.
Yeah, and this caught our attention because obviously, you know, we're talking about recovery, whether it'll be a V-shaped or a U-shaped or a W-shaped or an L-shaped recovery. When we caught a couple of articles on antiwar.com today, and the juxtaposition of the two of them is pretty interesting because on the one hand, Ellen Lord, who's the Defense Undersecretary for Acquisition, she went before the House Armed Services Committee last week, and she said, we need some money. We need tens of billions of dollars, because this whole time that the coronavirus was going around, we couldn't build bombs. We couldn't build more F-35s. We couldn't build more ships that we don't need. So these guys have been sitting around cooling their heels, and unlike the 40 million Americans who found themselves without jobs, these guys need to be compensated and need to be paid. And so although the money had been authorized through the CARES Act, which is the stimulus bill, it hasn't been appropriated. So Lord told the committee, if you don't appropriate this money, the Pentagon is going to have to cut weapons programs. You know?
Oh, my goodness.
And then she said, actually, she was being honest here for a change. She said, that, and you touched on this in your opening, the defense industrial base is the nexus of economic security and national security. So jobs, jobs, jobs is what she's telling them. But some jobs are more important than others.
Isn't it interesting that they get cut back, they didn't build enough weapons fast enough, and they came up short, and now they want bailed out and more to build these weapons. And at the same time, what's happening on an ordinary year, they always have too many weapons. They even admit it. But, of course, they don't want to stockpile and tell the people that they have too many weapons. So they distribute them to the police department.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we complained about that for years. Why are they sending tanks and military equipment? It makes them act like they're part of the military rather than, you know, a domestic police department. So in one sense, they need bailed out. In the other sense, they had too many anyway, even before this. But they were giving it away. So that's a stimulus where we'll send us even more money because that's our job. We have to do this. We have to produce defense jobs, and we have to make sure we have every modern weapon, because how could we patrol the high seas and be in 180 countries if we don't have the weapons to defend the world? Well, that's coming to an end, but in the meantime, they're going to be doing it, and my prediction is they'll get the money.
Yeah, and on the one hand, if you don't get the money, we can't make any more weapons. And as you say, then when it comes to the police force, well, we've got too many weapons, we're going to give them to the police force.
Right.
You know, so it's interesting. But, you know, here's something that we're both going to start crying over. Lockheed said it's going to only deliver 18 to 24 fewer F-35s because of the delays of the coronavirus. So what a tragedy for the country, more planes that don't fly. But, you know, it is a problem. And on the one hand, we can't make enough weapons. On the other hand, we make too many weapons, and it's probably malinvestment. I'm sure you would say what it is. But there was an AFP article that we were both looking at this morning after we looked at this one. And talk about some of the things that are some of the absurdities. And, you know, everyone's seen these. The list is a mile long. Flathead County, Montana, with 90,000 residents. They got a landmine-resistant armored vehicle. Of course, you always need that up in Montana. Ada, Oklahoma, population 16,000, a mine-resistant armored car and 34 M16s. Since Trump sort of ramped up, and this is a bipartisan thing, so don't get me wrong, since he ramped up the program in 2017 after it had been slightly curtailed by Obama, the year 2017, according to this AFP article, 500 million pieces of military equipment were transferred to police departments from the military. And it's interesting because you think about, okay, the policy problems of militarization of police, and we've dealt with that a lot in this program, and we certainly sympathize with that as a big problem. But what about the economics problems of the militarization of the police? All of these massive amounts of military equipment that really don't need to be manufactured in the first place. We've got to send them somewhere.
Yeah, and it doesn't deal with the real issue. Why is there so much violence in the inner cities and the places that are really reeling economically? Well, if you study it from just economics, the inflationary system and deficit financing causes a greater burden on poor and the middle class because prices go up. So that's basically an understanding issue that inflation causes this to happen. And the other thing is I think that our laws actually prevent the poor people, black, white, or whatever, from getting jobs. We prohibit them from getting a job, and we prohibit them from going to school. And it really is the school. That's what minimum wage is. You're going to school. You're learning how to be in a trade. And some places in the old days, you paid to go to those schools.
Yeah.
But if you go to school now and you work a little bit and you're learning and you get a minimum wage, that's criminal.
Yeah.
And the employer goes to prison for that kind of stuff. So that is not allowed to happen. That's where it starts. Then if you never go to school, you never learn a trade, you don't learn how to be a carpenter or whatever, then there's more likely to, you know, be more welfare and unhappiness in the inner cities. Then you throw into it the drug laws and the people who are poor because of our economic policies. You put the drug law, well, look, I can make a buck on these drugs. They're really lucrative. And of course they are. They're about 100 times more valuable than they would be if you didn't have the drug laws. So people, they're enticed to go in, they get in drug laws, and that's breaking the law, and it does get more violent, and it just keeps going on and on because of the policy. But it isn't, to me, it's hard to believe it's only racism. Racism. Well, I think that it's our dumb system, and then we create by our economic system, this mess, and then we think all we need to do is, well, it's rough and tumble in the inner city, that send them tanks.
Yeah.
And then you wonder why violence breaks out. But, you know, some of this equipment was to beef up the SWAT teams.
Yeah.
Now, that is something. Unfortunately, we don't have many conservatives who are close to being constitutionalists that don't, they like they like to have no knock.
Yeah.
And yet it's a law against no knock is, you know, the important thing, you shouldn't have a right to knock and barge in the door. How many cases has been listed where they went into the wrong place and they killed the wrong people and they tore the place up? And that goes a long way in building hatred and despising the police. Now you say, well, what percentage of the policemen do that? Probably a very small percentage, but they all get blamed for it. But it's partially, as I talk about the economic system and those conditions, those are past mistakes made by our government. You know, just welfareism, substituting for going to school and getting paid for it, it's not a good deal for those who are trying to get ahead or want to, because then they get taught that they have a right to what they were denied. And they were denied this because of racism, not because of stupid economic laws and a misunderstanding. And if we're going to look at corrections for this problem and dealing with the problem of the police, you have to legalize property rights, and you have to legalize the Second Amendment. And then you don't need an army in the cities. You know, the people could take care of themselves. I think it was Macy's I saw where they had some barbed wire and things trying to protect their building in New York City. And that's probably what would happen. And people might lose their enthusiasm for it if owners can't be in there with a gun. You know, they'd be arrested even if the person just broke the windows open and stole something, the person inside with a gun is going to be the greatest criminal. That's wrong.
That's wrong. Well, you know, don't knock that. They're getting a lot of on-the-job training up there in Seattle. They're learning how to run a dictatorship.
Yeah, there you go.
they're learning all kinds of stuff up there. But you're right. You know, a lot of this problem could be solved by smarter economics, allow people to work and learn something while on the job. No-knock raids, you mentioned. Also, when you have a violent foreign policy, we've mentioned this before, when you go over and destroy other countries, it's only a matter of time before that mentality comes home and you see destruction at home. And I think when you hand military equipment to police forces, it also imbues them with a military mentality. You know, if you are all decked out in all of this equipment with the rocket, you know, launchers and things, you're going to have that mentality of us versus them. And, you know, that certainly does, at least psychologically, tend to contribute to the problem. The other one I was going to mention, by the way, it's a famous from 2014, the LA Unified School District Police. They announced that they're going to send back the grenade launchers that they were given, but they're going to keep the armored personnel carrier. So you'd imagine your local school district, they've got grenade launchers at school.
You know, we're talking about the equipment that was military equipment and used, and they had too much and they needed to send in another order. So they said, well, we'll give it away because, you know, the inner cities are getting pretty rough. They need more weaponry. But they also have people that come out of the Army that are law enforcement people, and they go in, and they're I imagine there's a significant number of people in the police departments that were actually in the military at one time. So their mental status is completely different than what you're supposed to learn about policing. You know, private police forces in a town is supposed to be a lot different than when you're blowing up things around the world where nothing counts. You know, terrorism justifies you to be able to do anything you want. But when that mentality is translated into the inner city, bad things happen, and it's a mess. And right now, what I see happening is just escalation of this. This whole thing about what's going on in the inner city is connected in many ways. I find interesting about the connection with the stock market. The way I see this whole thing is today the markets were way down. I'll see if you agree with what I'm saying. The markets were way down, and so they immediately said, the markets were way down because of the second wave. The second wave is sweeping.
Yeah.
People are going to be wiped out. So once again, and this is, I've been arguing this case ever since this started. So they blame the stock market for not on the Federal Reserve and spending and all the reasons why you have a crash. It was because of coronavirus. Now they have the statistic out to show that the downturn occurred, before coronavirus. But now even today it was just direct. The markets all of a sudden turned around. You know, this recovery, which was going to be a miracle recovery, is now it's been sharply down. And they say, well, we know why it's down. And it's just constant on the television now. It's because the corona wave is coming back, and you better be scared. So
it makes you wonder about what you said in the beginning, you know, using the coronavirus as a cover for the inevitable collapse that was happening. You know, it does make you wonder about this. Well, speaking of the coronavirus, we've talked about it a little bit today, but this is not an original idea of mine. Someone else mentioned it, but it's quite funny. Has there ever been a pandemic in the history of the world where you actually had to be told there's a pandemic going on?
Yeah.
You know, has that ever happened? People would just normally know. But we keep, you know, pounding in our head that there's a pandemic. I was sort of sitting around jotting some notes down, Dr. Paul, and I was thinking, well, what has the coronavirus scare achieved? A few things. Well, while the people were hunkered down with their stay-at-home orders, trillions of dollars went to big banks and well-connected companies. Rule by decree, not by law, that's changed. The elimination of due process and habeas corpus. The weaponization of the fear of death to achieve a kind of totally supine society that will take whatever we're told to do, put on a mask, do what you're told. And also the destruction of private business and the whole private sector, and especially anything that's not connected to the state. While the people that are on the state payroll, and as we pointed out earlier, the state-connected companies, they continue to collect their wages as normal. So this kind of destruction, really, not in a pejorative, but in just sort of an objective sense, this is kind of a socialist revolution while we were hunkered down in our houses.
Yeah, and I think you've just dispelled the myth about the lockdown being a problem. The lockdown is actually a bigger problem than the virus.
Yeah.
You know, the virus is serious and all these things. But I just came across an article here this morning from this came from Off Guardian organization, which I think makes the point that we've been trying to make, but... This article comes here it is. A new study has found that COV2, which is related to COVID-19, may be five times more widespread than previously thought, and therefore five times less deadly. That means it's out there, nobody knew about it, never met anybody sick, and that's why then nobody knows there's a pandemic. But they're proving it, and they have to do this. But this is, a credible article, and the number they came up with, 60% of people naturally resistant to SARS-CoV-2, a new study reveals. But they're not going to let this get out. This is top secret stuff.
I think that was from Zurich, right?
Study? It was University of Zurich.
Yeah, which is no slacker when it comes to that. So it is, these things do come out, but what do you see in the headline? I was in Fort Bend County yesterday. Our church is up there. And after a few weeks of things relaxing, everywhere you look around in business, everyone is covered back up again. Everyone is, you know, doing what they're told. Because the media has told them that there's a new wave coming, you have to do it. But what is this new wave that they're talking about? And I'm going to finish up here, Dr. Paul, with just a couple of graphs to talk about the new wave of second wave of the COVID-19. Let's look at the first one, if we can. This is North Carolina. This is one of the hot spots, Dr. Paul. Look how hot that is. These are deaths in North Carolina. This is a seven-day curve. And look how it's going down. This is the second wave in North Carolina. Of course, they don't talk about this. They talk about increased cases because they're massively increasing testing, and you're going to get more cases. Here's the next one is Georgia. Here's the second wave in Georgia. Look at that wave. Second wave in Georgia. You know, and then, but what do you have here in Harris County? Look at the next slide. Here's Judge Hidalgo again. We got to flatten that curve again. She's put up a new wheel. Remember this from 9/11 when they had all these color-coded things? Well, she spun the wheel and decided that we need to minimize all contacts with everyone. Wow, the second wave is hitting Texas. Let's see what it looks like. Let's have a look at that next one. Look at this second wave in Texas. It's basically a bell curve where you see the reduction of deaths. That does not minimize the tragedy of people who are losing loved ones, but when there's also the tragedy of destroying people's lives. So keep fighting the propaganda. Keep not listening to the propaganda. And by the way, thanks for participating in Super Chat, Dr. Paul.
Very good. Daniel just mentioned that he was in the fourth band and noticed that people were doing exactly as they've been told. But who told them? I mean, they're dealing with their government and pseudo-government, and they come in very authoritarian, a lot of force, and a lot of intimidation, and a lot of threats that they're going to be arrested and all these things, and they have been told. But they have been told by sometimes bureaucrats, sometimes an elected official who's assuming that he has the authority to tell people what to do. Matter of fact, if you look to the law, they don't have this authority. And most of the time, you know, if you point this out to a policeman who wants to, enforce these so-called rules and do as they're told, they don't even realize there's no law that says this. The Constitution protects the right to assemble, and yet they are told that you have to wear this mask and you can't go to work, you can't go to church, and all these things being told. And the American people, basically, and in some ways it's good that people do follow the law, but these aren't even laws. These are made up intimidations, and it's falling into the lap of the people who want to stir up a lot of problems. And believe me, we have a lot of problems. We have the stock market crash, and we have the coronavirus, and all the news on that distorted. And the amazing thing, too, is they made this a worldwide event. But when you think about it, the malinvestment and the dollar crash is a worldwide event. So you had to have a worldwide reason for this. And the reason is the coronavirus caused it all. We're doing this, and we're just saving you from a disaster. We're taking care of you. We're making sure you have good health. So you do as we tell you. Well, that's not the way it's supposed to be. You know, it's not written. It's not a local people, you know, the city officials and county officials and state officials, let alone the government. Actually, Trump seems to be probably more reasonable than the rest of them, but it's international. But then you have the CDC and you have WHO, and they're all coming along and they're telling us. They don't have any right to tell us what to do and what we think is right for us. And this whole idea is so ironic that they will prohibit you from going to church. And there's nothing more sacred in the church, you know, position right now in the First Amendment, assemble for any reason if you're not hurting people. But this stretch of the imagination that you are a dangerous person, it gets so close to anybody who disobey is sort of like a terrorist. And they never define terrorism. Terrorism is a tactic. Yeah, terrorist isn't identifiable. So the person who disobeys these orders aren't criminals. And yet they're treated like criminals. And it looks very bad. And then that's enough to make the stock market get worse. But it doesn't cause the stock market stuff. The economic problems, you know, fell into the hands of this. And they're using the coronavirus as the excuse, as Daniel just pointed out. Things aren't that bad. And yet, and that's why people are going out. But there's still a large segment. We are bound and determined to do what they're told. And I think people should think about it and stand up to them and say, what law am I breaking? And sometimes a polite approach to that and asking a few questions will change a policeman's mind because he's never thought it through. But anyway, I'm glad that even by the statistics of others, that the coronavirus looks like it's going to be much less serious than once said. And also, now maybe they can concentrate on something real important, and that is the size of government, our police department around the world, our policing activities, the monetary system, and Now, that is a big problem they ought to deal with, but so far they've been able to bury that and people are ignored it. So, once again, we have a job to convince the people that the best road to take is that of working for liberties and therefore property rights and the right to take care of yourself and the responsibility one has. And then I think we can achieve peace and prosperity. Thank you very much for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Come back soon.